From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready coming to you this morning from the Clark Ford Studios. We've added our producer. He's a little bit of a loud sort in there barking around, but another lab in the Clark Ford Studio. Should be a good show today. We're going to talk with Ryan Brown, as we always do, to discuss SEC football here in a minute. Also today to further discuss the sad news, former Ole Miss basketball player, former NBA player Justin Reed passed away around 1 a.m. this morning, was diagnosed with cancer about 3 months ago and had a very, very quick downturn. So thoughts and prayers with Justin's friends and family. Just tough deal, and one, to be honest, kind of rattled me a little this morning. It makes you want to go get a full body scan and see what's going on. Because we're talking to a guy that was – I went to his Facebook page this morning, and he was dunking basketballs on May 5th and now gone.
It's unreal.
Middle of October.
It's was he 35 years
35
old?
35 years old.
Yeah, yeah, I never covered him as like a beat writer, but I remember covering the league, and he was such a good player and always had that smile on his face. And if I recall correctly, and please correct me if I didn't, I'm not completely up on my Ole Miss history, but he was a freshman on that team that went to the Sweet 16.
That's right.
And then if I remember correctly, they went to the tournament the next year.
They did. They played UCLA
in Pittsburgh and lost. And then I always kind of thought he and Aaron Harper and David Sanders would carry a team. I thought they would surround them with enough to carry a team, and it just didn't really happen. But even during that, they were still fun to watch.
He's the first Ole Miss player to ever be All-SEC all four seasons. Was second-round pick by the Celtics. Had his best run for about half a year with the Timberwolves. Actually got a pretty good contract out of that. And then stayed about another year and a half. Got traded to the Rockets, but never appeared in a game with Houston, and then retired at that point. So, but I remember watching him when I was in Minnesota covering baseball, because I almost played in that Metrodome tournament, the Dairy Queen Classic with Minnesota up there.
Yep.
We went to a Timberwolves Jazz game, and he was playing in it for the Timberwolves. That, I guess it was 2007. That was early 07, so. But anyway, tough news out of Jackson this morning. We'll talk to David Kellum about that here in a little while on the show as well. Ross Dellinger with an excellent story on the Ole Miss's hiring of Ed Orgeron. We'll delve into that a little bit. It's fascinating. He's got that. He talked to the lady at Chicken on a Stick. We've got a lot of stuff going on today. We'll get into that search a little bit and have
people that like story time.
A little story time today.
I can get into some story time. I was that year covering the SEC as a whole for the Press Register. Do you know we broke the David Cutcliffe was fired story?
Did you?
We did. Got no credit for it, but we broke it. I was pretty connected to the program at that time. Knew that coaching search inside and out. And actually was someone who talked to Rick Neuheisel. I can remember talking to Rick Neuheisel on my deck in Spanish Fort.
Rick Neuheisel wanted the job.
Rick Neuheisel wanted the job. Ron Zook was interested in the job.
Interviewed Randy Shannon.
Randy Shannon wanted the job. To this day, I'm befuddled at how that search ended in Ed Orgeron. Well, I know why it ended in Ed Orgeron, because that's who Robert Kiat wanted. Mm-hmm. How he got to that place, I don't think we'll ever really know. And this is not to pour acid on Robert Kiat's legacy, but Robert Kiat gets a free pass from Ole Miss people on that. He gets a free pass. I've never understood why he gets a free pass. I don't think if Ross Bjork made a hire that atrocious that he would get a free pass. Robert Kiat essentially ran off Tommy Tuberville, was going to hire Mike Cavan.
Oh, yeah.
And then hired Ed Orgeron. That's damage to a football program. And yet people give him a free pass. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I think it's interesting that you do. I don't think a non-Mississippian, whether he's an Ole Miss alum or not, would get the same grace. I do not believe that. I think it's an in-state loyalty. It's where I do believe that people who go to Ole Miss have two experiences. I think there's the in-state kid has an experience, and I think the out-of-state kid has an experience. That was my experience. And that's not a criticism at all. I'm sure that's at a lot of places that way. But I think Kayat gets a grace, gets a forgiveness, gets a pass because he was a football hero and because he was a Mississippi guy who talked like a Mississippi guy, acted like a Mississippi guy, and was not only forgiven for the Orgeron thing, but forgiven for the Tuberville thing because there was a path to keeping Tommy Tuberville.
We'll delve into that in the story a little bit as the podcast goes on today. Podcast brought to you by the Oxford Exxon. Remember to follow the Oxford Exxon on Twitter, comment at them, follow them, and you can be entered into Free Gas Fridays, giving away three free tanks of gas this weekend as Ole Miss and LSU square off tomorrow night from Vaught-Hemingway Stadium. Also, 49-cent wings at the Oxford Crystal. Get those for college football Saturdays. Get those for NFL Sundays. Just get the 49-cent wings there at the Oxford Crystal. Lunch specials, ribs. Remember, catering tomorrow for the Grove if you'd like to. You can get a couple slabs of ribs. You can get a pound of pork with quart size sides as well. So the Oxford Exxon and the Oxford Crystal on Highway 6 taking care of you. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's really that simple. No haggling. It's right to the bottom line. It's a great deal. You get a great product, great service after the sale. And you can get the quote, shop it around if it makes you happy. Or you can get the quote and let the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other podcast listeners, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience and go ahead and start enjoying your new Ford today. 662-257-1900. And by the way, don't forget, the end of your deal, right before you finalize terms, tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention this one. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. A new one of those dropped yesterday. You can mention the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, which will drop today because it should have dropped yesterday, but someone whose name rhymes with Real McCarity screwed something up. It'll drop today with Larry Holder. So if you're driving up today, tomorrow, you'll be able to listen to a couple of podcasts. You can hear Larry Holder talk about Ed Orgeron and more. Anyway, mention any of those, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford and Amory.
We'll go to Ryan in a few minutes. First, though, we'll start with this Ed Orgeron thing as we're talking about. Ross Dellinger, again, in the Baton Rouge Advocate. That's, I think, theadvocate.com or either the number two, theadvocate.com, one or the other. They both might work. They've changed that around over the years since they've started to get – because it's not just Baton Rouge anymore. They've really kind of branched out in New Orleans and into Acadiana and then different places a little bit.
One of the few newspapers that's figured out how to make it work a little bit.
Yeah, I think they saw the Times Pick changing what they do in a negative, in a minimal way, and said, "Oh, we got an opportunity here," right. And they've jumped on it a little bit. But anyway, all right. So I'm curious. Read the story there. You'll get a lot of background as we'll hit some of this. You talked to Rick Neuhausel?
I did. So this is 2004, and the Mobile Register had gotten off the Auburn beat. They wanted me to break news. That's what they wanted me to do. They wanted to break news. And I was doing investigative stuff. We've told Mike Price story time numerous times. T. Martin, the Tennessee stuff with T. Martin, I did that. I did a lot of stuff. Did a lot of enterprise stuff.
Jamarcus Russell?
Did all that stuff. I did recruiting, and I did the Saints, and I did SEC Game of the Week, inside the SEC, all that stuff. But what they really wanted me to do was, in November, December, break coaching stuff. And I knew, I guess, midway through 04, that David Cutcliffe was in real trouble. That it wasn't going well. That there was a split, that there was a decent chance he wasn't going to keep his job. And like I told you, we broke that story. I had someone tell me literally the moment he walked out of the meeting, he's gone. And so I started working on the Ole Miss coaching search. And one of the people who wanted the job was Rick Neuheisel. He'd been at Washington, had gotten the NCAA bracket thingy. Ted Miller knew Rick from covering him. And Ted Miller got me Rick Neuheisel's phone number. And I can remember calling Rick Neuheisel, really anticipating hearing him say, no, I'm not. That's not the job I want. That's a long way from, you know, I want to stay out west, blah, blah, blah. And him just flat telling me, yeah, I want it. I'm trying to get it. And he's like, where'd you go to school? And I was like, oh, God, I went to Ole Miss. Who do you know? I'm like, well, I know a lot of people. What do you hear? I'm like, I don't know. I don't really hear anything yet. I can remember the conversation. He wanted the job. Gene Chizik wanted the job. My source on that was Gene Chizik. Jimbo Fisher, I won't say that he wanted the job. I will say that Jimbo Fisher was extremely interested in the job. My source on that was Jimbo Fisher. I can't comment as to Charlie Strong. I never spoke to Charlie Strong.
We'll take Ross's word for it.
I'll take Ross's word for it. I can tell you that Rick Neuheisel and Gene Chizik wanted the job. And I can tell you that Noel Mazzone, who was very good friends with Dennis Erickson, told me that Dennis Erickson wanted the job, and I think that's been established. Neuheisel really thought he could do big things at Ole Miss. Whether he could or couldn't, I don't know. I remember Gene Chizik telling me, that's a great job. That could be a great job. Neuheisel thought it was a great job. I don't know what Erickson really thought of the job. I think Erickson at the time wanted to get out of San Francisco so badly and back into the college game. Erickson felt like he could run a football program anywhere and be successful. He thought he had a formula that you could plug in, you would just change the names, and that the formula worked.
He's a very confident guy at that point.
Oh, man, justifiably so.
Yeah, he had some resume to back that
he
up.
He wanted Oregon State.
It's hard to do.
I mean, he wanted Oregon State. So, here's my question for you. And you tell me, please, as I told Ryan, you'll hear me tell Ryan Brown on another subject. If I'm wrong, tell me, no, Neil, you're wrong. I'm cool.
Okay.
What is interesting to me about Ole Miss, and yes, I went to school at Ole Miss a quarter of a century ago. I'm not a person who has kept up with it, really. I went to school there for reasons that have been documented. I had a decent time. It was fine. It was nothing about Ole Miss. It was fine. I like Ole Miss perfectly fine. My kids might or might not go to Ole Miss, et cetera, et cetera. Yet I view Ole Miss, I'm going to blow you away here. I view Ole Miss as a top 15/20 job. I think Ole Miss is a better job than Tennessee. Surrounded with more talent. Facility wars are no longer an issue. Ole Miss's facilities are as good as anyone else's. TV is no longer an issue. If I want to watch every Ole Miss game, I can. If I want to watch every Tennessee game, I can. I can watch anybody. If I want to watch every Mississippi State game, I can. TV is no longer in the equation. Used to be a big deal. You go to Tennessee, you're on national television 6 times. You go to Ole Miss, you're on national television once. That's not the case anymore. You go to Ole Miss, you're on national television 12 times. You go to Tennessee, you're on national television 12 times. So it's been evened out. I've always told you, I don't think a kid walks into a stadium and goes, all right, well, this one holds 65, and this one holds 85. I'm going to the 85. No, he's been playing in front of 700 people. It looks huge. Everyone has practice facilities. Everyone has Nike or whatnot. Playing field's been leveled.
All right.
So I'm getting my thought. I'm viewed by the masses as somewhat anti-Ole Miss. Yet I view the Ole Miss job as a borderline elite job. Now, it's not Alabama. It's not LSU. It's not Georgia. And it's not Florida, although we could get into a complicated debate about that. But Florida's in a very fertile recruiting area.
Yeah.
It's in the next group.
Okay, I have one caveat.
Okay.
Or one question. What SEC programs are not top 20 jobs in your formula?
Vanderbilt.
Okay.
Kentucky.
Okay.
Tennessee.
Okay.
Not, it's not in a fertile recruiting area.
Okay.
It's just not.
Okay.
In
national recruiting's fickle. If you win, you can recruit nationally.
I'm going to piss people off here. I don't really care. They already hate me, so what's a little more hate? I don't think Mississippi State's an elite job. I don't think you can recruit out.
What separates Ole Miss and Mississippi State, in your opinion?
Ole Miss has shown a propensity to recruit out-of-state kids in a way that Mississippi State can't.
Academically and athletically.
Period.
Yeah.
Ole Miss is close to Memphis. You can be in Memphis in an hour. Mississippi State, their closest metropolitan area. I mean, I guess it's Memphis and / Birmingham. You're not going to get kids out of Birmingham. You're not getting any kid out of Birmingham that Alabama and or Auburn wants. It's a pipe dream. I giggle at it. I giggle at people.
Certainly nothing with any consistency whatsoever.
There are people on our beat that do it. There are people on that beat that do it. Oh, man, Ole Miss is in tight on this kid from Spain Park. I always go, did Alabama offer him? Yeah. Okay, well, then he's going to Alabama. Did Alabama offer him? No. So he's a project. And some of the projects work out, but you're not going to make a living off projects. You're not going to build. You're not going to build you're not going to build an NBA champion off second round draft picks. You might get a diamond in the rough here and there, but you're not going to build a champ. You're not going to build an SEC power off of, hey, this was a guy that was a late bloomer. That is not the formula.
I'm going to answer your question in 1 second. We're not going to talk about this today, but I will just tell you it happened. Judge John Kelly Luther has denied Leo Lewis and Kobe Jones motions to sever for transfer of venue in the Rebel Rex case.
That's what was expected.
Yeah, so anyway, that happened.
And by the way, people say, why did it take so long? Because
everything takes
the justice system just takes a while. Yeah. The legal system takes a while. People do things.
No conspiracy around this one.
10 days don't necessarily mean 10 days.
Yeah.
They had 10 days to submit their arguments. And then he was like, I'll get back to you when I get back to you. I'll read it when I get around to reading it. And so he got around to reading it. He made his ruling.
We'll move on.
An extra 2 weeks in the legal system is what it is.
The answer to your question.
But I haven't finished.
Okay.
Yet, Ole Miss people. And I'm not criticizing anybody out there. Chase knows where my heart is on this, so he can tell you that I'm not being critical. Ole Miss people who love Ole Miss, who think it's the greatest place on earth, who come to Oxford and it's exciting and it's Pleasantville and it can't wait to go. I'm not making fun of that, by the way. I get it. Ole Miss people who love Oxford the way I love going to Wrigleyville. We'll tell you, yeah, but we can't get the great coach. Why? Ole Miss people who love the hell out of the place sell the potential of the program shorter than people like me who I'm fine with Ole Miss.
Two reasons.
Okay.
One is that phenomena of being at the big boy table is still very fresh.
Okay.
Still very new. It's not even this generation. It's the last 7 years, 5 years, 2 years, 3 years.
Okay.
It's since the SEC Network decided they'd cut a $43 million check.
Okay.
That's one reason. It's
okay.
New.
Okay.
They haven't necessarily even had a coaching search with that being the case yet.
I would agree.
Two is you're not carrying the emotional baggage that typical Ole Miss fan is of having the WAOM moments, of having everything jerked out from under them, in their opinion, throughout the course of their athletic fanship.
Okay.
Of going through these coaching searches where you think, oh, well, Rick Neuheisel got to top five with Washington and Colorado, but now it can't work. You know, it doesn't work because if somebody does something or screws it up or whatever.
It didn't work because Robert Kayette didn't want it to work.
That's what I'm saying. But something happens.
Yet Robert Kayette is revered.
It's all those things combined to where it's created a this doesn't apply to any one person. Okay. Just more of stereotype. When you stereotype schools, Ole Miss is a really weird case study to me because they have this strange... They have both complexes. They have a superiority and an inferiority complex all at the same time.
Yeah.
For the stereotype
yeah.
thing. And it is. It is something that would drive Freud crazy on trying to figure out exactly how that goes together and works. But that's what it is. It's this place is great, this place is great, but I'm never going to get you to understand it's great. I can't convey that to you. So it's all...
It's just so funny to me. I get exactly what you're saying. It's why I'm fascinated. And when I say this, I say it for a number of reasons. I really hope it's just the one-year bowl ban. Best for our business, number one. It makes the story go away, and I'm kind of ready for it to go away. I'm sick of it. And then, you know me. I'm fascinated by how things turn out. I want to see who they end up hiring when that's not an issue. When it's not an issue, who does Ross Bjork hire? Who does Ross Bjork try to hire?
And who knows?
And I have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kept it really close to the vest. He said he was going to. I do anticipate that there will eventually be leaks because people talk. And stuff's going to get out. I don't think.
Well, I mean, even the search firm stuff got leaked by people around the search firm. I mean,
right. And I've never understood why it was privacy is of paramount importance. When that becomes a motivating factor in a search, I think the search is a little off focus. Yeah. But who do they go after? I mean, it's so funny. I'm not making this about me. I will get labeled a homer by outsiders for that comment. And yet insiders will go, "No, man, I don't think you're right. I don't think it's as good a job as Tennessee." And I'm sitting here telling you, I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to pussyfoot around this. I watched with my two eyes Hugh Freeze take over a program that was
awful.
I watched him with what I would deem to be an average at best staff. Sorry. At times, a below average recruiting staff. Keeping it real. I watched that team come fourth in 25.
And a two-point conversion.
If you replayed that play, and we're not getting into that play, but when people say you can't do it at Ole Miss, I go, yeah, you can. I just saw them. If Arkansas doesn't convert goofball play, Ole Miss is probably in the national playoff.
Yeah, because everybody believes they would have beaten Florida the second time around.
Yes, they absolutely would have beaten Florida
the second time around. Will Greer was gone.
And I mean, when I say probably in the playoff, I'm going into who gets into the playoff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what they do in the playoff, I don't know, and it doesn't matter. Would they have beaten Clemson? I don't know. It's immaterial. That's not the point. My point is I watched a head coach with not a whole lot of experience – and a very average, and I think I'm being generous here, coaching staff, and probably a below average recruiting staff at Ole Miss win the Sugar Bowl and get within a breath of the national playoff. And so when people say you can't do it, I just watched you do it. Yeah, you can. Why can't you do it? I just watched you do it. That same staff lost more recruiting battles than it won, Chase. We know that because we were covering recruiting.
Yeah.
You can get into why they lost and all that stuff. That's not really my point. I think it's a better job than the people who love the place think it is. I've always thought that dichotomy was fascinating to me, the psychology of that. I don't know why that is. I have watched it. And when I look at what you compete against in the SEC West, here's what I see. The best program in college football. An Arkansas program that doesn't have the recruiting base to make it happen. Bobby Petrino won there, but Bobby Petrino wins everywhere. Nobody else wins there. Auburn, you'll hear us discuss this with Ryan Brown. I'm of the opinion, and this is somewhat educated, that when Georgia and Alabama are both strong, Auburn gets squeezed. You have an LSU program that's mismanaged. You have a Mississippi State program that I think they're going to be fortunate to hang on to Dan Mullen. I think Mullen wants out. I don't think the hiring of Jimmy Sexton was an accident. I don't think it was, I need a new agent, let me go get Sexton. I think there was a reason for Sexton, and I think that's a program that is limited. I think Dan's done a great job there. I say that and I get crucified, but I do. I think he's done a really good job there. And then who else am I missing? Texas A&M, which is a baffling program.
We talk about it with Ryan as well.
And I don't know enough about it really to get into why it is what it is, but it baffles me.
Yeah.
That's what you compete against.
And you have Vandy as your common opponent.
Yeah. When people say the SEC's out to get Vanderbilt, I'm always like, well, I'm gonna throw a fly in that ointment. They get Vanderbilt as their common opponent.
Yeah.
As their permanent opponent.
Yeah, whatever.
That's a W.
Yeah.
If your program's worth a crap at Ole Miss, you're beating Vanderbilt 9 out of 10 years. Let's keep that real.
So, we'll obviously talk about that plenty more as we move on with the coaching search, the season, and whatnot. Now let's go to Ryan Brown in a second. Before we do that, I'll tell you that the podcast brought to you in part by Tyson Drugs, the makers of Sildenafil. It is the $10 version of that $50 or $60 little blue pill. Works in as little as 15 minutes and has the same length of effectiveness as the other guy. 662-252-2321. Give them a call. Give them your doctor's name, and they'll get the prescription ready and even deliver it to you if you are not local. You can also go online at Tyson Drugs and fill out the form. So, again, TysonDrugs.com, 662-252-2321.
If you want to sign your youngster up for Oxford Park Commission basketball, you can still do so. Ages 5 to 15, the entry fee is $50 per child. Go to OxfordParkCommission.com. Games will be played Monday, Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturday mornings. So, a lot of fun if you're interested in that. 5 to 15, boys and girls, OxfordParkCommission.com. Podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. He's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across Mississippi. His site's gotland.com. If you're a buyer, he has the biggest land inventory in Mississippi. If you're on the fence, if it's in your future, if you're thinking about selling, get in touch with Michael. He'll come to your home. He'll tell you what he does. He'll market your property, and he'll get the dang thing sold for you. It's Michael at tomsmithland.com, 662-719-3967, or visit his Facebook page. We're also brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. It gives you all the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, but all with the personal touch. OUB is offering one-year CDs right now at 1.75% APY, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out LiveOxford, BankOxford.com, or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used them. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, their work is second to none. Comer's an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. It's ComerHeatingAndAir.com. Check out their Facebook page. Make sure you tell them that you heard about them on the podcast. You'll get $20 off your service. 662-934-3846 for Eric. 662-832-8749 for Shane.
Now, Ryan Brown on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Ryan, welcome back into the show. You and I both can now say that our baseball teams did not make it to the promised land. So we can officially move on to football. I'm going to start here because you did a radio show in Arkansas yesterday, I think with Bo Mattingly, and I've done that show before. Yeah. And you said, I'm paraphrasing, I'll let you clarify. You said that if Gus Malzahn were to lose tomorrow to Arkansas, that he might not coach another game at Auburn. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I said. And I said, you know, the way I phrased it was, I'm not convinced he survives the weekend. Now that, you know, if by me saying I'm not convinced, let me be abundantly clear. What I am saying is that I'm not saying he would be fired. I am saying I can't 100% say he would survive the bye week, because that's what Auburn has, the bye week after Arkansas. And then you get into their closing stretch, another road game against Texas A&M. They play at home against Georgia, and they play at home against Alabama. And if you lose to Arkansas, those are obviously eminently losable games. And the tide has turned. That's a bad phrase in this state, but I'll use it. The tide has turned against Gus Malzahn right now. People are upset after that collapse at LSU. They see him doing the same things over and over and over again. And if he lost Arkansas, that'd be one of the worst losses he's had in quite a while. And I think people would see the program going in the wrong direction. But now let me add a caveat I added with Bo, I'll add with you guys, is that Auburn is in a position where they've got, in all likelihood, a lame duck athletics director. Jay Jacobs is the AD. He's been unpopular already, and he's had one scandal after another pop up. And almost everyone believes his job eventually is going away, but it hasn't yet. And you guys have followed enough coaching searches to know if you are going after elite names, one thing you've got to have is a stable athletic director. They want to know who they're working for. Even though ultimately they're more powerful than the athletic director, they don't want a guy that's going to meddle and cause them problems. So they want to know who they're working for. And Auburn can't really provide that right now. So that's one thing, as I told Bo, that's actually working in Gus Malzahn's favor, is that Auburn is so unstable in athletics director that they might hesitate to pull the plug on their head coach because of that right now.
I know I've asked you this before. I'm going to ask again because things change in just a few weeks' time. There's a chance that this is the craziest offseason the league's had in a long time.
Yeah.
There could be 6-7 openings. Because guys decide to leave, guys get fired, whatever. Given the, I worked in that state, I covered that program. Look, I have a lot of respect for Auburn. I like Auburn. Auburn's a school that Campbell's thinking about going to. I mean, I'm this is not an anti-Auburn thing. But if Alabama's going good and Georgia's going good, I'm not sure that's a good job. Much less a great one.
You know, it has always been one of the most difficult recruiting jobs in the Southeastern Conference. Not because Auburn doesn't have a lot to sell, and not because Auburn isn't a good football program, but because of what you just said. You are recruiting in Alabama, which Alabama produces a lot of good football players.
It does.
Auburn, the way they're positioned, their main recruiting areas are Florida Panhandle. And they've gotten down to Miami some, but Florida Panhandle, state of Alabama, state of Georgia. And you're fighting Florida, Florida State, and the Florida Panhandle. And even if the further south you go, you start to fight Miami, now Mark Richt. But, you know, back in the day, you were fighting Butch Davis and people like that down there. And Georgia, when they're any good, you're fighting Kirby Smart now. And you're fighting Nick Saban in Alabama, who hasn't lost many recruiting battles in his time in Tuscaloosa. So it becomes a tough recruiting job, because you got to fight the state school in every state you're battling, and you're not the state school in your state. So, you know, it is not the easiest recruiting job in the world, though they have managed to get good enough players to at times even win big there. But you make a good point. I don't – in the entire time I have been following this school, I can't think of a time where the two jobs that are their biggest rivals have been in better shape. And, boy, we're jumping really to some quick conclusions on Kirby Smart based on half a season. But it certainly looks like he has that headed in the right direction. He definitely has recruiting heading in the right direction. But if you were to take the Auburn job right now, you would take it against Alabama at potentially the highest point in the history of their program, and against Georgia, who appears to be climbing towards one of the highest points in the history of the program. That's a pretty tough spot to be in.
Yeah, I agree completely. You throw in the fact that Florida State, at least as of today, is a very elite program, and like you talked about, competing for kids in the Florida Panhandle. I just think it gets hard. Speaking of Florida State, want to hear a crazy one I heard yesterday, and give me your thoughts. Jimbo Fisher to Texas A&M.
Wow. I don't know where. I know Jimbo Fisher had some issues with the administration at Florida State, and I kind of lost track of that after the Arkansas thing, or excuse me, the LSU thing fell apart. Because I kind of thought, boy, if Jimbo isn't going to bolt for LSU, he must have really settled his issues with the administration there, because that was a great ticket out if you didn't like your administration. So I guess I kind of thought that had been settled, but maybe it hasn't. Maybe he still has some of those same issues. And I would, man, that's an interesting spot for him at Texas A&M, because at Texas A&M, you can become a legend very, very quickly. You get that team to Atlanta one time, they may start talking about building statues. That is a program that is starving to win. But I'll go back to the question I think I've said on here before. Somebody's got to sit me down and explain to me why nobody's been able to do it there. That's what I need to know, because, again, you're in a recruiting hotbed in theory in Texas. Why has nobody ever been able to win big there? That's really puzzling to me.
It's bizarre. I mean, there's money's, yeah. Money's not an issue.
No, facilities aren't an issue.
A recruiting base is not an issue. You're a stone's throw from Houston, which produces a lot of football players.
I don't understand. It makes no sense.
Are they a version, though, of Alabama pre-Saban, from just kind of good old boys and the way they're so hands-on with that program? Because all you hear about is their meddling, you know, board of trustees and everything around there, where everybody's kind of got to have a seat at the table and a country club membership.
And that may be true, Chase, but, I mean, even Alabama had shown signs. Yeah. Well, not signs, but Alabama had greatness prior to Saban.
Yeah.
Now, it had been a minute, but they had greatness.
Yeah.
You don't even have that with Texas A&M. To find real, true greatness with A&M, I guess you got to go all the way back to Gene Stallings, don't you? I mean, I think R.C. Slocum won a conference there. Jackie Sherrill won a conference there, so that's probably unfair. But, man, it's when you start talking R.C. Slocum and Jackie Sherrill, you're having to dig pretty far back to find anything great to come out of that program.
It's like we were talking about Nebraska and Tennessee. I don't even know, given the way that God, I hate when I say this because I feel like I'm channeling Houston Nutt, but I did cover him for 4 years. In the times in which we live, that's what Nutt would always say. I don't even know that you can go back past like 2000. Like, I think that's like the cutoff point. If you're going to say what can a program be, I think if you go past 2000. You might as well just start talking about like Benjamin Franklin and Alexander Hamilton and stuff. I don't think the 80s and 90s and stuff are relevant to what you can or cannot be today. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think things change, and I think you bring up a good one, because I maintain Nebraska has changed probably as much as any program in America, because Tom Osborne won back in Nebraska when he could convince players to come from other states to play.
Yeah.
And come to the middle of nowhere and play football in this system I've got. And then he also had this, I guess, what is now illegal, walk-on system, where he didn't have to burn scholarships for his big offensive linemen because his quarterback clubs took care of them. And so he was recruiting 50 guys a year, and he was getting kids to come from other states. Well, you know, this day and age now, and hey, we're Nebraska. We're going to play on TV a lot, so your mom and dad will get to watch you in New Jersey or California or wherever you live, or Florida, wherever you live. Well, now we live in a day and age where everybody's on TV, so on every game. So mom and dad can watch a kid play anywhere.
Yeah.
And I mean, you go stand in Lincoln, Nebraska, and you look around in a 500-mile radius and tell me how many players you're finding. So that's it. To me, things like that do change, Neil. Though Nebraska has one of the great histories in college football, I don't know that you could even put a Nick Saban or Urban Meyer in there. Obviously, they're going to win, but I don't think they're ever going to turn Nebraska back around to what it once was. I just don't know that you could do that there anymore.
I'm with you. That's why when people talk about Scott Frost going to Nebraska, now look, Scott Frost might love Nebraska so much that it's so sentimental and so emotional, et cetera, that you're not going to turn it down. That is certainly conceivable, yeah. And I'm not making fun of that. Great. But if Scott Frost wants to win nationally, that's not a good job to take. Now, along those lines, Tennessee plays in Tuscaloosa tomorrow. The line's like 4,000 points. I think it's 34 and a half or something. Alabama's going to kill them. Alabama's going to beat them as bad as Alabama wants to beat them. There's talk that Butch Jones might not get through next week, et cetera. I don't mean this to be a hot take. So if I'm wrong, just say, no, Neil, you're an idiot. You watch way too much baseball and you haven't paid attention. I don't think Tennessee's a great job.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's another one that has changed a little bit the same way. You know, Phil Fulmer used to recruit nationally, and I don't know if you had this perception, but when Phil Fulmer was recruiting nationally, it seemed like he was the only one in the SEC doing it. It seemed like it was such a revolutionary idea.
Yeah.
That you would recruit, quote unquote, nationally.
But that's kind of my point. They have to recruit nationally because there's no players there. And they're not going to go into Alabama and take a kid that wants to go to Alabama or Auburn. They're not going to go into Florida consistently and take kids that want to go to Florida, FSU, whatever. And everyone goes into Florida and Georgia and stuff. It's just they have to – and a kid from New Jersey is not going to Tennessee like they did back then. I mean, you make a great point. I think Tennessee is Nebraska East. I do.
Well, and I don't totally disagree with that. And let me make this point.
Okay.
I'll take Alabama, for instance, because, listen, I grew up in this state. I have followed these two programs forever. This was never the case in Tuscaloosa. Never, ever, ever, ever. I'm just going to run down, you know, a random list of some of their best players. Minkah Fitzpatrick, he might be the best player in the country. He's from New Jersey. Jalen Hurts, quarterback, Texas, Houston, Texas. Damian Harris, running back. He's from Kentucky, Northern Kentucky. Jonah Williams, left tackle, Folsom, California. Now, quick caveat, his mom and dad did grow up in the South. He's got Southern blood in it. But Folsom, California is where he played high school. I mean, think about that for a minute. Alabama's going out and getting guys from New Jersey and Texas and Kentucky and California. They never did that when I was a kid. It was so rare that Alabama would get a player that wasn't in Mississippi or Alabama or maybe Georgia. And now Nick Saban, he goes anywhere and gets them, and they come there because they know they're going to go to the league.
Yeah.
They know they're going to win. They're going to be on massive TV games. And Tennessee can't do that. I mean, they're not I guess they could potentially do it, but they're not the only one doing it anymore. That's what kind of set them apart back in the Bill Fulmer days.
It's the same exact formula that Calipari has at Kentucky. If you buy into my system, I'll get you into the league.
Yep.
It's what Saban does at Alabama, and he does it brilliantly. And Saban and his staff are phenomenal evaluators, and you'll hear more and more. They're in on sophomores and freshmen before anybody else is. They're way ahead of the, game. I mean, Saban's the best coach in the history of college football. So that's why what will they be when he leaves? I don't know, but he's the best coach in the history of college football, and he adjusts to the game better than probably 99-point-something% of his peers ever have or do.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with anything you said there. I don't know that Tennessee can ever become that again, and I would maintain that since Fulmer, they've made three really bad hires, and again, that's another. You have to step back and ask this question. Why do they keep making bad hires? Is that the only people they can get to come to their job? Do their power boosters just not know what a good football coach looks like? Is there something inherently wrong with that job?
You want a theory?
I mean, they just keep making bad hires.
You want a theory?
Yeah, please.
I think they're afraid of getting turned down publicly.
That's stupid.
But that's what I think. I think they're so obsessed with what the rejection will make them look like, that they don't they short themselves from a search standpoint.
But, you know, and here's what's so dumb about that, because I think you misread your fans when you do that. You know what fans, so if you, every time Tennessee's job gets mentioned, John Gruden gets mentioned. So if John Curry and the Tennessee Power Boosters went after John Gruden, and Gruden just came out publicly on ESPN and said, you know, hey, I appreciate Tennessee coming after me. This Monday Night Football gig is so good. I love, my family loves it. I love it. I'm keeping it.
Yeah.
You know what I think most Tennessee fans would say?
I'm glad we went after
him. We missed him, but at least we tried.
Yep.
At least we tried. I know we went after him. We gave him our best shot. He said no.
I'm with you completely.
I just think that's what the fans want to know. You swung for the fences. And, all right, if we fouled out on John Gruden, you know, maybe we end up with the next guy down the line. But we tried on John Gruden. We didn't just assume he wouldn't take the job.
All right, about 3 minutes left with you. We'll touch on a couple of games that are at least interesting. We might just touch on one. LSU comes here tomorrow to play Ole Miss. The Tigers, a 7-point favorite. It's kind of a – I don't know whether it's misguided or whether it's just hopeful or whatever, but there's kind of an optimism in town this week. Is it based on any form of reality, in your opinion?
I have written it off because I kind of feel the same thing over here. I've just written it off with nobody knows better how Ed Orgeron could screw up a game than Ole Miss fans. So I assume they look at that and say there's never any guarantees to that guy. You know, the one thing Dave Aranda, any good defensive coordinator does this, he wants to do is make you one-dimensional and only attack that one dimension. Well, Ole Miss comes prepackaged one-dimensional, so that kind of makes that interesting. Auburn tried to challenge them through the air with a poorly designed and executed passing scheme and failed miserably. Shea Patterson and Ole Miss, they're a better passing team than Auburn. I fully anticipate this line is right. I think this is a really tight game. I would still say LSU wins, but I don't think that's an easy win for them by any stretch of the imagination.
Last one, Kentucky is at Mississippi State. It's a big opportunity for the Wildcats, but they're 11.5-point dogs at State. I kind of think State wins comfortably. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a wake-up call. State has been, I don't know, I shouldn't call them disappointing.
Yeah, you can.
I wouldn't call them that, but they, you know, since the Georgia game, they've just been kind of below the radar. Nobody has paid them a bit of attention. I think this is kind of one of those wake-up moments both for Kentucky and for State. I think this is a good spot for Fitzgerald and Mullen and Mississippi State. I think Kentucky gets ripped in this one.
You do think Auburn wins. I know what you said, what would happen if they lost, but you do think
they
win,
right? Yeah, I do. And yeah, that's the other half of that equation is I do happen to think Arkansas is a really bad football team in that game. They won that game 56-3 last year, so you got to convince me something has changed that much. Arkansas's no better. They're worse than they were last year. So I can't see Auburn losing that.
The end of November is going to be – it's going to be – for guys with radio shows in places like Birmingham where people are college football nuts, you're going to have easy radio. You guys are hardly even going to have to prepare. You just got to make sure the mics are on. I mean, literally, Bielema's going to get fired. Jones – there's an opening at Ole Miss. There's talk about Mullen going someplace. Half the league could turn over.
You know, I think the one guy that might end up saving it is Kevin Sumlin, though. I left him for dead after the UCLA debacle. But I thought before the LSU game, Auburn would beat LSU and lose to Texas A&M. If he beats Auburn, Sumlin, I mean, you can see a path for him to get to 9 wins
yeah.
if he can really get things together. 10 wins. I like Kellen Mond. Now, he didn't look great at Florida, but I think this kid is getting better. And that defense, Chavis hasn't been what I thought he would be, but they've improved a little bit. I think Sumlin may actually save this thing. And boy, after week one, I would have told you he was the worst odds.
I'll put it this way.
I thought Matt Luke might even have better odds.
I think Kevin Sumlin's going to coach against UCLA again next year.
Yeah, I think he'll be the one that will beat the odds and save it.
Oh,
that's crazy. I thought he was gone.
I think he is gone. I think he's going to be in the Pac-12.
Who's he going to coach there? Arizona? Arizona State?
One of those two.
Oregon State's open. That seems like Kevin Sumlin land. Wow, what a misfit that would be. Kevin Sumlin at Oregon State.
What a disaster. All right, man. Hey, appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Y'all too.
Thanks.
Thanks to Ron for his weekly appearance on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. We're going to go to David Kellum in a second to talk about the passing of Justin Reed, as well as a little Ed Orgeron story time with the voice of the Rebels. As we transition into David, I'll tell you part of the podcast is brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. They're 30 years old this year, and all underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also a leader in condo financing in Oxford, so ask about the float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chasa Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip for visitors is some of the inshore trips for speckled trout, triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasacharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John 228-348-7817. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan, located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. They have great service after the sale, great lease deals. Get in touch with Gene and Sandy. Tell them you heard about them on the podcast or at rebelgrove.com. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. Podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you're a business with a high ticket product or service, HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, those kind of things. Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. Rates as low as 4.9%. Terms that extend to 7 years. Loan amounts up to $100,000 and credit scores down to 580. They will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben 443-935-5013. Ben's waiving the setup fees for podcast listeners. It's a $500 savings, so call him today.
Now we'll shift over, go to David Kellum on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Mm-hmm. David, thanks for joining us for a few minutes. Even though it is under these circumstances, Justin Reed passes away around 1 a.m. this morning after about a three-month battle with cancer. He was in Jackson receiving treatment down there. You and I were talking off air a second ago. Just a shocking turn for a guy that really kind of personified those Ole Miss teams during that period.
Well, you're right, Chase. I'm just absolutely shocked to be that young, and just tells you, you know, the cancer is no fun to say the least. But we were all hoping that Justin would be able to extend his life a little bit longer, but it just wasn't to be. And I think back when he was a player and how vivacious and energetic and incredible athlete he was. And, you know, it's just sometimes certain diseases are hard to overcome. I'm sure he fought it with his last breath.
He's a freshman on probably the most successful team in school history, in that Sweet 16 right. team. What do you kind of recall just from – you know, I don't know if you recall, you know, covering recruiting necessarily, but, you know, he gets to campus and he's such a vital part of that group.
Well, big, big get as far as the recruiting world goes to get Justin Reed from Provine to come, which was really neat. And the thing that I loved about Justin was that even though he's extremely successful in high school, he gets here and immediately is out to prove that, A, he belongs, and B, I'm going to show you that I'm really good. And he his freshman year, when he was surrounded by a whole lot of great players, and we, you know, got to the Sweet 16 and had a phenomenal year, he averaged 11 points a game. I mean, just right out of the gate. And it's just kind of unique. I think he sort of kept that mentality the rest of the way. He didn't have anything else to prove, really, except just try to improve your game, try to get to the NBA, which he accomplished both of those things. But he constantly loved the challenge of the opposing team and the opponent that he might have to deal with. I remember a lot of times we'd go to shoot around day before the game, and Justin would say, "We're going to give you something to talk about tonight." And more nights than not, he did. But he loved the game. He loved the competition part of it, and always played with a smile and hat. But that was a fun group. The whole group. Not only very good and very successful that year, but they had fun playing basketball.
I remember him as a high school player. I was covering Auburn, and Auburn got a commitment from him briefly. And I can remember them thinking, you know, you're not coach, you know how this works. I mean, you talk to coaches and stuff. They can't talk about recruiting, but they do. And they would say, this is an NBA guy. And I can remember when they lost him to Ole Miss, there was a sense around that program that that was not good, and that he was obviously going to be good for Ole Miss, and that all proved to be true. He was when I remember covering him as a guy was covering, usually the team that he was playing against was just he always kind of had a smile on his face. That's kind of what I remember. And post game, he was really gracious with whoever. I never got to know him because I didn't cover him, but I remember just kind of liking him. I remember liking watching him play.
Yeah, no doubt. Neil, you go. He had to be at the top of everybody's chalkboard, you know, through his career, his scouting report. And I could even visualize him going in, pointing at the top of the chalkboard, saying, hey, no, this is going to work against me. Just let you know. I mean, he wasn't really a trash talker, but he was just a phenomenal player. And he really believed in his skills. But he played the game constantly with a smile. And you think about, I mean, you guys have covered Ole Miss for a long time. How many pro players can you count that have come through the Ole Miss basketball program? One hand, yeah. You know, two hands at the most. I mean, you can hold them in your hand, that's for sure. And for him to, for us to break through and get a pro type athlete to come here was phenomenal in hoops, and it paid off. And of course, it went to the Celtics, had a nice little run there. And so he had a lot of wonderful things that happened to him in the world of basketball, but he was really, really a big part of Ole Miss basketball at that time.
Yeah, because that Provine posse was kind of the bridge, you know. I mean, that late 90s, early 2000 run, you had Keith and Michael and all those guys, but that was the group that kind of was able to extend it a little more where, you know, had that group not come in, it might have even fallen off right there for, you know, Rod before you got to the 04 year and when it started to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, and you think about Aaron Harper and all the huge shots that he made, and Sanders, David was incredible too. And Justin was kind of the glue guy with that group. He was the one that went out every night, got you double-digit points. I mean, he averaged, 11 points his freshman year. I went back and looked, and he was 14 or higher and ended up averaging nearly 19 points a game his senior year. And, of course, we were able to, his sophomore year, to get back to the dance, and those following 2 years, things just kind of fell apart, had two losing seasons. But Justin was consistent. You knew each night you were going to get his, and he was a small forward that could post you up and dunk on you. He could back up, hit a long shot. He was really the central point of that whole group.
How did he kind of hold them together and handle the losing seasons? I mean, he's a kid that had never lost games anywhere, and then all of a sudden that team kind of fell off the table.
It was bothering him. I mean, you know, if you approach sports with a smile, as you know, Neil was talking about a moment ago, and you're real happy, and everybody looks at you from the outside, said that guy looks like he's having fun. That's a player that's having fun. And then things aren't going well, and it's not quote fun. It gets very tough. But I think he did a pretty good job of trying to keep the guys together, maximizing what we could do through that stretch. He was really more of a leader on the floor, but he could be vocal too when he needed to be. And I know it had to be a little bit frustrating for them not to be able to repeat that, but it shows you the nature of the beast that we deal with in our league. And, you know, just in general, trying to get back to a Sweet 16 is hard. That was a very special year. That's a golden year. You star that one as far as Ole Miss basketball goes.
You looking forward to covering this year's team? They appear to be pretty deep.
Yeah, I am. I'm excited. AK's pretty exciting. Now, as you guys know, Andy's pretty transparent about what he has, and he's very excited
really?
About the pieces and the possibilities. I heard where you guys took him. I got to listen to the podcast where you took him to Jackson, and he was like off the chain. I got to go listen to that.
Yeah, it's worth an hour of your time.
oh man,
you know, Andy's never really handcuffed.
No.
On that particular night, whatever possible handcuffs have ever been on him were completely off.
Well, it was good. A little less tame than our Reb Talk shows is what I heard. I have to go back and listen to it.
I probably prodded him a little more than you prod him on Reb Talk.
Right.
And that's not a criticism. Right. It's just different shows.
No,
but
I'm the home announcer, and you're the get down to the nitty gritty guy.
He was really good. I thought it was funny that they were picked 10th because, like I told Chase yesterday, no one – who's going to cover the league is really covering the league right now. Who knows? It's just always
right.
There's a reason for preseason predictions, is it gives them, gives the league something to announce, put something in the news cycle. But anybody,
well, and they always pick AK Lowe, and he always beats it. I mean, every year it seems like, maybe once or twice that hasn't happened, but he's never really gotten the credit I think he deserves. He's an outstanding coach. He's done a really good job with a program that didn't have a facility for a long time, and now, you know, you got the pavilion, and I really think that things are going to turn for him in a positive way.
You did, speaking of coaches' shows, you did 4 years' worth of them with
three.
Three. I always think four, and it was three. You did 3 years'
it
worth
felt
of
like
them.
20.
With Ed Orgeron.
I know where you're going with this.
What are your most vivid, I won't say fondest because that's the wrong word. What are your most vivid recollections of dealing with Ed Orgeron?
Yeah, it was a roller coaster. I mean, it really was. There were times that he was great mood, great to be around, and there was other times he was really frustrated and he just kind of spewed it out on everybody in his circle to some degree. But I want to think in my, you know, I always look at the glass half full. Guys, I'd like to think it was a time that Ed, you know, learned and grew and changed a lot of things. I mean, he didn't treat assistants the way he should. He was always thinking somebody's out to get him. It was his first time being a head coach. He hadn't been a coordinator at that point, you know. And so I think it was just a tough situation. When he was successful at USC and successful as an interim at LSU, I thought, well, maybe things have turned the corner. But now he's in that position where they expect to be beating Bama and winning national championships. So can he get to that point is the big question mark. Can he surround himself with the right people? Is he doing things a little bit differently now? Surely he is. But he was something on the TV shows in the morning and the radio show. He used to be a little bit calmer on the radio shows. But I'm telling you what, that was one energetic dude we were dealing with back then.
All right, I know this is not a fair question for me to ask to the voice of the Rebels and the guy who has to deal with all these.
But you're going
to
ask it anyway.
I'm going to anyway. You're going to see me tomorrow, and I'll let you hit me as long as it's below the neck and above the waist. You can take one shot. What were your first – and don't give me the politically correct answer. What were your first impressions the first time you met the guy and you went, so that's who Ole Miss hired?
Yeah, because of just from a resume standpoint first, I thought, wow, they're really thinking this guy's the diamond. Because, you know, when you hire somebody, you think, okay, is this somebody that's a diamond in a rough, they're thinking, or is it a well-established coach that's got a history behind him? And so he had to fall into the hoping he's a diamond in the rough category. But from just the Ole Miss image, you know, and I don't know if it's fair to, you know, make a coach fit the coat and tie image or whatever that we've had maybe through the years. But he obviously was Louisiana Cajun accent and all those things. You're like, wow, really? This is going to be interesting. And, of course, you're right. I always look at the positive side of everything and need to in my capacity, but and hoping that things would work out. But I was shocked. I really was kind of shocked that – you know, he was able to merge at the top of the group.
It's pretty hard to for a coach to say David Kellum's out to get him. So I mean, you know, I am curious on how on Ed would spin it around towards you.
Well, and not necessarily just me, but I think he felt that the world was kind of crashing in on him and desperately trying to have the success. And there was a lot of pieces to the puzzle, I think, at that 3-year period that he was, you know, struggling with people maybe not supporting him, so to speak. But, you know, it always gets back down to wins and losses, as you guys know.
Always.
Fan base will put up with a lot of stuff if you win. And they're not going to put up with much at all if you lose. And even the days of you could be a good person and everything being great, we'll live with you a little bit because you're a good person, even though you're not winning. That's over, too. I think it's strictly about wins and losses.
David, good luck on the call tomorrow, and we'll see you at some point during the game.
Looking forward to it, guys. Appreciate it. Thoughts and prayers of everybody associated with Justin Reed and his family. You know, this is a tough one, a tough day.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks to David for joining us for a few minutes there to talk about Justin and Orgeron. You can catch his call of Ole Miss and LSU tomorrow night on the Ole Miss Radio Network. We will talk about a couple other things. We'll do that. I'll finish up a little business. Today, the podcast is brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape, Oxford, Tupelo, and all the surrounding area. Also, all over North Mississippi for Skeeter Beaters, the way to get rid of those pesky mosquitoes and enjoy your outside living space. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Services include landscape design, installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, and turf. They can do holiday lining as we are getting close to the holiday season. So get a free quote, 662-607-7773. MasterCutsLawn.com, and when you sign an annual contract, mention the podcast. First cut is free.
Podcast also brought to you by Vitamend, 3010 Old Taylor Road in front of the Faulkner Flats Apartments next door to Lapel's Dry Cleaning. Same IVs and shots as before, but they've added the cryosauna, which is great for removing inflammation, toxins, speeds up recovery after a workout, all sorts of things. Gets as cold as minus 220. It's a two-minute process, and you recover quickly. Infrared sauna, combo packages, the overserve treatment, all sorts of stuff. They have a smoothie bar as well. It's all natural foods, no added sugar, locally sourced. It's the same number as before, 662-638-3600. They're open Tuesday through Sunday. IVs and shots are Friday through Sunday. Call ahead. Make sure they have someone ready and staffed, and then they'll take care of you. It's if you want to send an email, by the way, info@vitamend.com. Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance. Did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates. Give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare your business insurance policies. If you own a rental property, they challenge you to give them a shot at that property. And if you do, you won't be sorry. If you need another reason to give Romero Miller State Farm a call, go read the reviews on Google. It's Romero Miller State Farm, 662-893-1212. And we're brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry's an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. If you're coming up this weekend, coming up for the LSU game, you're thinking about that second home, go to his site, harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. Get in touch with Harry before you assume that this isn't a good time. Harry will show you that historically, given some of the trends, this is a great time to be investing in a second home, in a condo. Get in touch with him. Let him give you the facts so you can make an educated decision. It's ha@harryalexander.com.
Kind of got a kick out of the New York Times this morning. So our friend Scott Cassiola, who covers the Knicks and different people for the New York Times, you know, last year, there 2 years ago, they did the Not the Knicks, where he went across the country covering actual good basketball stories instead of covering the Knicks. Last night, the headline was Carmelo Anthony finally got to have fun during a Knicks game. Was the headline in the New York Times today. So there was that. It was good.
Carmelo looked very comfortable. It was their first regular season game together. Look, the Warriors are the best team in the West. The gap between the Warriors and the Rockets and Thunder, at the minimum, is not what it was a year ago. It's different.
Warriors are in last place in the West.
No? Yeah, they're done.
Last place.
They don't do. They're running out of time.
Oh gosh. So, anyway, let's see what we got going on. We've got a beer garden coming with Larry Holder.
Yep.
We have that. If Neil will actually use the right microphone to do the intro and outro, we'll get that to you sometime today. Seeing good reviews on the Soft Verbal with Jacob Peeler. So, again, check that out if you have not. We've got a write-up with some of the details from Justin Reed's career on the front of RebelGrove.com. I'll update that with a couple of the things that I've gotten while we've been on the podcast today. And then Ole Miss and LSU tomorrow night from Oxford. We'll have complete coverage at rebelgrove.com. So thanks to David, thanks to Ryan, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.